This is Radio Boston. I'm Doug Tribou.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. To the Supreme Court of the United States, it's case number 14-556, Obergefell versus Hodges. But to the rest of the country, it is the landmark case that could decide whether gay marriage is a constitutional right.
Boston attorney Mary Bonato, a civil rights attorney for GLAAD, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, argued the case before the Supreme Court today. Here's how she opened.
The intimate and committed relationships of same-sex couples, just like those of heterosexual couples, provide mutual support and are the foundation of family life in our society. Yet the legal commitment, responsibility, and protection that is marriage is off limits to gay people as a class.
Well, Dahlia Lithwick was in the courtroom today. She writes about the courts and the law for Slate, and she joins us now from Washington. Dahlia, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to talk to you. Can you tell us what it was like sitting inside the court today?
Well, the more interesting question, I think, was what was happening outside the court, because it was bananas. There were protesters and screaming and signs, and it all sort of ends usually when you get into the chamber, except we had a protester today, which we rarely have. Right after Mary Bonato finished her presentation, someone leapt up and started screaming about sin and, you know, damnation and hell, and had to be dragged out by, I think, six marshals screaming the entire time. So a lot of drama, but I think it goes to how just heated this issue is. Usually the court is able to contain the discussion to very, very arcane legal constitutional principles, but today it kind of busted out right in the middle of oral argument.
Wow. So a lot of emotional drama. Let's talk a little bit about the nitty-gritty legal drama that was played out this morning. Can you just sort of briefly tell us what the nut of the arguments were presented by both sides?
Well, I think you heard Mary Bonato making her case in the case of the plaintiffs from the four states that are at issue here. And that is, you can't ban gay marriage because the 14th Amendment, either under the Due Process Clause or under the Equal Protection Clause, says that this should be available to gay couples as much as to straight couples. The other side, and that was really, I thought, pretty ably defended by Michigan today, said, listen, we have reasons that we want to limit marriage to opposite-sex couples. And the principal argument that was advanced today was, we want to preserve that incentive for couples who may go around accidentally getting each other pregnant. We want to have them incentivized to marry each other. It's really important to the state that we do that. And by sweeping in couples who can't procreate, can't accidentally getting each other pregnant, we would be redefining marriage as an institution that's about just loving each other rather than being bonded to your children. So that was the other side today.
Well, Dahlia, we have tape here from oral argument today, as the court is wont to do for these major cases. Let's listen to a little bit of it, because there was quite a bit of discussion around basically the virtually unprecedented nature, I should say, of having the high court decide the legality of same-sex marriage. So here's a question that came from Justice Antonin Scalia.
Do you know of any society prior to the Netherlands in 2001 that permitted same-sex marriage?
As a legal matter, Your Honor?
As a legal matter.
I am not.
Millennia, not a single other society until the Netherlands in 2001. And you're telling me they were all, I don't know what.
No, what I'm saying is, taking that tradition as it is, the court still needs a reason to maintain that tradition when it has the effect.
The issue, of course, is not whether there should be same-sex marriage, but who should decide the point?
Yes,
you're asking us to decide it for this society when no other society until 2001 ever had it.
That's Justice Antonin Scalia questioning attorney Mary Bonato. Apparently, Justice John Roberts also used the phrase for millennia. What are we to take from that exchange, Dahlia?
Well, and I would add that Justice Anthony Kennedy, who probably will be the swing vote if we look at the three big, big landmark gay rights cases that have come before, it's Justice Kennedy writing for 5-4 courts. He also used the word millennia, and in fact, he opened with it. So I think that there is clearly concern on the part of the court's conservative bloc that marriage has meant marriage. It's between a man and a woman. It's been that way for thousands of years. And we can't willy-nilly redefine it. And I think that Scalia, it's very, very wide-ranging discussion. It wasn't just Netherlands and Europe. It was also ancient Greece and Plato and a real attempt to say this is absolutely not done. And I think the upshot of that argument was, and this was came about later, why don't we wait and see? Why don't we let this play out? Why don't we let the states that want to allow it do it? Why don't we let democracy do its work? And, you know, in 20 years, when we're ready, let's see how that goes. I should add that Mary Bonatta's answer to that was, we didn't let it wait and see when it was time for the anti-miscegenation, you know, the no black and white intermarriage right. laws, when the court took up Loving versus Virginia in 1967. They didn't wait for the states to wait and see how interracial marriage would go.
So you mentioned Justice Anthony Kennedy, and we have to talk about him and what he said a little bit more today, because as does go with so many of these cases, how the court decides will kind of looks like it'll depend on which way he decides to break. So we've got a little bit more of tape here. And this is Justice Kennedy, you'll hear, in an interaction between him and John Birch, the Special Assistant Attorney General, arguing on behalf of the state of Michigan. And Birch is laying out a scenario in which there are two couples who've been married for a number of years. They each have a 3-year-old child. One couple believes they are bound to that child forever, and the other believes that their marriage is more about their emotional commitment to each other rather than the child. So we'll begin with Birch, soon to be interrupted by Justice Kennedy.
A reasonable voter, which is what we're talking about here, could believe that there would be a different outcome if those two marriages were influenced by those two different belief systems. Ideas matter, Your Honors. And you know, the out-of-wedlock birth rate—
But that assumes that same-sex couples could not have the more noble purpose. And that's the whole point. Same-sex couples say, of course we understand the nobility and the sacredness of marriage. We know we can't procreate, but we want the other attributes of it, in order to show that we, too, have a dignity that can be fulfilled. But you argued in your brief, and Justice Kagan was quite correct to say, is that you're saying that this harms conventional marriage. That was the argument you made in your brief, as I understood it.
Justice Kennedy, to be perfectly clear, the state of Michigan values the dignity and worth of every human being, no matter their orientation or how they choose to live their life. That's not what this case is about.
So, Dahlia, I'm curious. I mean, what are we to take from that interaction, or maybe even more broadly, today's oral argument as a whole? Because, you know, a lot of legal watchers say that oral argument may not actually tell us anything about what the justices are specifically thinking, that it is legal theater to a certain degree.
I think that's right. And again, I think that the fact that Kennedy opened with his, this hasn't changed for millennia, shows that he's clearly showing both sides that his mind is open. But I do think that if you go back and you look at this triumvirate of cases that Kennedy himself has written about gay rights, going back to Romer versus Evans, Lawrence v. Texas, and Windsor, the DOMA case from 2 years ago, the word dignity is key. Kennedy locates the right for gay couples to do what they want and need to do in this basic idea, it's a very inchoate idea, of human dignity. And so I think that for Birch to come back and say, oh, this isn't about dignity, marriage doesn't confer dignity, don't even worry about dignity, is really going to stick in Kennedy's craw. I think that when the rubber hits the road, Kennedy does not want to be told that marriage is not a dignity-conferring enterprise. And he pushes back really hard, I think, precisely because for him, this is all about dignity. Does that mean that he votes with the liberals in the end? Hard to tell, but it does mean that I think that this line of cases where Kennedy is deeply, deeply solicitous of human dignity, privacy, the right to order your life the way you want, how your children are affected when you're denied dignity, really, really comes to the forefront in that colloquy and, in fact, several others, where he can't quite believe Michigan is saying that marriage only exists so that we're bonded to our kids. There's nothing else going on. Kennedy says, I think that's upside down. And if we're about bonding parents to their kids, we almost have to allow gay marriage.
Well, Dahlia Lithwick writes about the courts and the law for Slate. She joins us today from Washington. Dahlia, wonderful to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And joining us now from outside the Supreme Court in Washington is WBUR's Fred Tice. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Doug.
So set the scene for us a little bit. What's it like outside the court today there?
No, it was quite the scene. Right now it's quite quiet, but this morning quite raucous, beginning at about 7 a.m. when I got there. Most of the people who were out in front of the Supreme Court were people who were hoping to get inside, and they were, by and large, eagerly awaiting gay marriage. I met a woman who came from North Carolina. She'd spent three nights on the sidewalk, and she was very excited to be here to hear this momentous case argued. There were a few people who were out there in front of the court, red megaphones, who were shouting a lot of things against the gay people, like Jesus doesn't love you, God hates fags, that kind of thing. But overall, actually, the whole scene remained very peaceful, notwithstanding that.
Tell us about some of the people who have been speaking or spoke earlier today outside the court, Fred.
Well, I just happened to connect with Julie Goodridge at 7 o'clock this morning in front of the courthouse. She was just getting in line. She had somebody stand in line for her. And Julie Goodridge, of course, gave her name, along with Hillary Goodridge, her former wife, to the Massachusetts gay marriage case back in 2003, which gave us gay marriage in Massachusetts in 2004. She wanted to remind people that we've got it pretty easy in New England, but in other parts of the country, a lot of people suffer from discrimination against gay people. Doug, here's what she had to say.
We don't live like that in New England. We're very fortunate, and I am hoping that the rest of the world doesn't have to live like that anymore either.
Fred, what about opponents of gay marriage? What did they have to say to you?
I ran into one gentleman, Eric Moore, who had been he's from Pittsburgh, and he was having a heated discussion with a proponent of gay marriage when I came upon them. And he wanted to explain that he does not have personal animosity towards gay people, but he's a man of faith. He believes that it's a sin. Homosexuality is a sin. Here's what he had to say.
What I want for them is mercy from God, but the problem is that they want God's mercy with no conditions, and that's not how it works. You got to turn from your sin to receive God's mercy, and that's why we're here. We don't want their physical harm. We don't want their spiritual harm. We want forgiveness and mercy for them.
And Fred, a moment ago, we heard part of the argument from Mary Bonato, the civil rights attorney, arguing for same-sex marriage. But you talked to her outside the courthouse. What did she have to say?
Well, so one of the things that she was peppered with questions with, I think from Antonin Scalia, from Justice Alito, and also from Justice Kennedy, is this idea that marriage has always been defined in one way, as one man, one woman, going back for thousands of years. And here is her take on that, Doug.
I'm certain that ancient Greece and Rome did not provide the marker for what our Constitution means. And that's why I kept trying to return the questions to the 14th Amendment's promise of equality, equal dignity, liberty for all of us. So I think that between the argument and the briefs, they have what they need to make a decision.
That's WBUR's Fred Tice joining us from outside the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C., where the High Court heard arguments today in the Obergefell versus Hodges case, which challenges state bans on same-sex marriage. Fred, thanks a lot.
Glad to do it.
Well, as we just heard, Mary Bonato, the attorney outside the Supreme Court, she was the one who argued on behalf of gay couples in today's landmark case. And in many ways, this morning's oral argument was the culmination of a careful, years-long legal strategy crafted by Bonato herself. She's been called the Thurgood Marshall of the gay rights movement or the gay marriage movement. And she's the lawyer who pushed to legalize gay marriage here in Massachusetts back in 2003. We spoke with Bonato on the 10th anniversary of the famous Goodridge case. And she described to us then the long road that ended at the Supreme Court today. It began in 1999 when Vermont became the first state to grant civil unions to gay couples.
After we achieved what we did in Vermont, I couldn't go anywhere in Massachusetts without people saying to me, well, if they can do this in Vermont, why can't we do something better in Massachusetts? And I have to say I agreed with that analysis. The Massachusetts commitment to equality and the Constitution is incredible. It was crafted by John Adams as multiple commitments and statements declaring the equality of all persons that the courts in this state have really taken seriously over the years. Not completely perfectly, but have definitely taken seriously.
However, at the time, the Massachusetts legislature had been introducing bills to ban gay marriage year after year. Nevertheless, in 2001, a group of plaintiffs came forward and Bonato took up their case, knowing full well that gay marriage was one of the most controversial, socially divisive issues in a generation.
Well, it's a battle we picked. And I have three brothers, as I mentioned, and we had plenty of games and plenty of competition, and I never liked losing. And my competition, you know, was honed, and I was determined, as was everyone here at GLAAD, to do what we needed to do to put forward the best case possible.
Bonato and her legal team had a considerable challenge before them. She calls it a legal Mount Everest. Public opinion was far from settled at the time. Deep-seated beliefs that marriage is expressly for procreation and that gay marriage is bad for children still held sway. And the state, which had the obligation to defend Massachusetts marriage laws, had an especially potent legal argument which boiled down to,
this is not a big deal. This is not a big human rights issue. This is not a civil rights issue. And essentially that the Commonwealth's laws are presumed to be constitutional and correct. And why would the court want to disrupt that?
Don't rock the historical or legal boat. That was the heart of the state's case against gay marriage, and it made legal experts working on the Goodridge case with Bonato very nervous.
Some of the private lawyers who were working on friend of the court briefs, who said things like, I never thought we could lose, but now that I've read the state's brief, I can see how you can dress it up to make it seem that this is permissible.
But Bonato found the most elegant counterargument in the Massachusetts Constitution itself, which begins, all people are born free and equal and have certain natural, essential, and unalienable rights. She intensely studied John Adams' historic document. It said all people. And on March 4th, 2003, Bonato says it was her job to convince SJC judges that all people included gay and lesbian couples in Massachusetts. It's a moment that still makes Bonato pause.
I mean, we know what you said, right? But
right.
what were you feeling and thinking in the moment?
I did not know what would happen in the court. I knew they would be prepared. I knew I would receive a lot of questions, and those were true. But I just really wanted to make sure that I conveyed to them as much as I could that we are really talking about the Constitution here. And that's what matters most, is the Constitution as it's applied in the lives of real people, where it really matters if they're treated equally or not.
A majority of the justices agreed. In November 2003, Massachusetts became the first state to legalize gay marriage, although the issue wouldn't be finally settled until May 2004, and only after ugly and protracted debate. Which is why Mary Bonato looks upon the Goodridge decision with what can be best described as tempered pride. It was an historic win, and because of it, she was able to marry her partner of 26 years, as did thousands of other Massachusetts couples.
I mean, there's plenty of times I have to still pinch myself because I am now, you know, legally married, and now my marriage is respected, and it's shocking at some level that this has happened. So all the people, and there have been many over the years, have said, I never thought I would see this in my lifetime, often telling me this as they're weeping. I can understand that. I mean, when you grow up in a world where this is not even something you can talk about, the idea that you're as married as any other person on the planet in the United States of America is pretty incredible.
But Bonato also sees it as just one step forward in a long, still unfinished journey. And this is where I'd like to circle back to the idea we began with. Gay civil rights advocates call her the Thurgood Marshall of their movement. Mary Bonato demurs. But they may have a point. In 1954, Marshall challenged school segregation and took the historic Brown v. Board of Education case to the Supreme Court. But he did so only after a majority of states had banned segregation on their own. The timing was crucial, because essentially, Thurgood Marshall had asked the court to affirm what America was already doing on its own. Bonato believes in a similar strategy when it comes to the big prize regarding gay marriage. She takes a long view of civil rights history and believes it's worth waiting for an emerging national consensus on gay marriage before taking a blockbuster case to the Supreme Court. Well, That moment has arrived. Gay marriage is now legal in 37 states and the District of Columbia, and a 2014 Gallup poll found that more than half of all Americans would vote in favor of a federal law legalizing gay marriage across the country. A fact which leaves Mary Bonato, the fierce and brilliant advocate of marriage equality in Massachusetts, characteristically humble and endlessly hopeful.
You're so much more an optimist than I thought.
Yeah. Well, good. The thing that keeps me getting up every morning to do this work is that I really believe in people's capacity to be fair. I believe that we have shared values as a nation overall that includes commitment to freedom and to equality. And so I am hopeful.
Lawyer Mary Bonato. She spoke with us on the 10th anniversary of the Goodridge case that legalized gay marriage in Massachusetts. She argued on behalf of gay couples today before the United States Supreme Court.
And stay with us. Technology is increasing profits, but not workers' paychecks. We'll dive into why and how to fix it. I'm Doug Tribou.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.